Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Building the Ballot. Yes, we had some results in the contemporary baseball era Hall of Fame induction or selection, I guess I should say. The induction doesn't happen until the summer. But so, you know, we have new Hall of Famers. So to talk about it, I've got Graham Womack. How you doing, Graham?
Hey, Adam. I'm good as ever. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, I appreciate you jumping on again at short notice. Well, we kind of knew this was coming for a while, though.
Oh, sure. Yeah. This day of the year is like Christmas for us. I mean, I look forward to this day every year.
You know, I look forward to this even more than the BBWAA results, just because, well, for a couple reasons. First, it's, you know, the players that have been overlooked for a while. And, you know, second, we have no idea. Like there's no ballot tracker for the era committees. So it's all a surprise and you're left to guess what you think might happen. And I think the scenario that we both picked as the most likely scenario is the one that happened.
Yeah. I mean, I figured after Harold Baines got in under basically the rationale that the 81 and 94, 95 strikes cost him 3,000 hits. It was like, okay, well then Fred McGriff's a sure thing to get in because the 94, 95 strike cost him 500 home runs. And sure enough, that happened. I think the thing that sort of crept into my thinking in recent weeks was I thought there might be kind of a surprise second Hall of Famer. It sort of seems like that's happened little bit in recent years. And so I thought that actually it would maybe favor somebody like Dale Murphy, and that didn't quite happen, but Murphy did decently in the votes compared to some of the other people on the ballot.
Yeah. Now that we have results, we can kind of see how this new 8-person ballot, 3 votes each, how it can kind of look. So just to go over the results, Fred McGriff is unanimous. That takes 16 of the 48 votes off the board right away. So right away, that's going to make it hard for anyone else to get in. Next was Don Mattingly. He had 8 out of 16. So we got halfway there. Kurt Schilling, 7 out of 16. Dale Murphy got 6. And then Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Rafael Palmeiro, and Albert Bell all had 3 or fewer. And I counted up the votes of the other candidates. And if every person on the committee used all of their votes, that means the 4 of them had 11 votes between them, yeah. Which, you know, they probably didn't use all their votes because none of them even got 4. So unless they were all very spread very evenly, like 3-3-3-2 or no. Oh, now I'm doing math. Oh, God. Let's not do that. But yeah. It's tough to get more than one in this new format, I think. Especially, of course, as we mentioned last episode, if one is going to be like unanimous with 15 or 16 votes, that takes a lot of the air out of the room.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, to me, one of the questions coming into today was, what was going to happen if Fred McGriff, you know, was unanimous? And he was. And it's funny, my wife and I, we go to an annual holiday craft party that's in the Bay Area, and we live in Sacramento. So when the announcement was being made, or right around as the news was coming out, we were actually driving back to Sacramento. And so we were listening to a little of the live stream on MLB Network, I think. And, you know, I think it was Harold Reynolds and somebody else was, you know, making a big thing about, oh, you know, it's a Harold or Fred McGriff was unanimous, just like Mariano Rivera or whatever, you know, just talking about how it was such a big deal. And it's like, no, those are two completely different things. I mean, Rivera, you know, got 100% of the vote from the writers. He's the only person to this point to get it. The veterans or era committees, on the other hand, guys get 100% of the vote, like more than you would think. Like High Pockets Kelly was unanimous, like back in the day. And it's the kind of thing that I think if the committee had really cared, maybe, you know, better thing might have been Fred McGriff to get in with 12 or 13 votes, you know, and free up a few of those votes. You know, if he gets in with 12 votes and it frees up 4 votes, you theoretically could have put Don Mattingly in with that. I mean, if you just kick 4 votes over to him, but I'm also, I don't know. There are worse things than having a one player class being Fred McGriff. I mean, he's somebody who I'm glad is in the Hall of Fame. I think you can make a Hall of Fame case for almost anybody on this ballot. The only two that I'm not super sold on are Albert Bell or Rafael Palmeiro. And even them, if enough time passes, you could do worse than having either of those guys in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I wish there was a way to like either vote for 3 names or maybe just you get like a super vote that you can just say, you know what, just all of them. I'd be totally fine with Albert Bell being in the Hall of Fame. It would just be so much easier if we could clear eight names out of the queue, but that did not happen. So I want to piggyback on something that you just said about the 100%. Lee Smith got 100% of the vote. Like that, yeah. That's not the same as Martin. Like these are players, of course, that were passed over 10 or 15 times already. So it's nowhere close. Most recent 100% were Lee Smith. In 2017, we had Schuerholz and Bud Selig, who were 100%. In 2014, Torrey, Cox, and La Russa were all 100%. Before that, we got to go back to, I think that goes way back to before the ERA committee. So probably weren't any. I didn't know about High Pockets Kelly, but that data is coming from the little website that we put together with Veterans Committee results, Dorowski.com/vets, V-E-T-S. A lot of Veterans Committee data there, which I will have to update this week because we had a new election.
Yeah, no, and it's funny. I mean, one of the things that's slowly on the back burner for me is writing a book about, you know, the veteran slash era committee history. And man, I really want to dig into every single election that's ever happened and really see I want to learn so much more about kind of what the voting history is of all this. Because yeah, I mean, that's really the big theme here is so much of it is unknowable. Like I wish, for instance, that they would just release the entire vote totals. I get trying to spare guys' feelings, you know, about who got less than five votes, but come on, we're all adults here. They were in the major leagues. I mean, these guys have dealt with all sorts of vitriol from, you know, beat writers over the years. This wouldn't be anything worse than that. And getting one vote for the Hall of Fame in one of these elections is a lot better than most people who play baseball are ever going to do. It's an honor to get one vote in one of these elections even.
Yeah, I totally agree. I wish we could see exactly how many Bonds and Clemens got in particular. So what does this say for PED candidates then that Bonds and Clemens got what is essentially the bare minimum, which is less than four?
To me, it tells me it's going to be quite a while before we see these guys start getting in. I mean, I'm on a long enough timeline, I'm bullish for a lot of these guys. I think Barry Bonds will eventually be a Hall of Famer. I think Roger Clemens will be. Guys who weren't on this ballot, like Alex Rodriguez, for instance, I think A-Rod's probably an eventual Hall of Famer. It's a little harder with his case, you know, just since, you know, he failed, what, two PED tests, I think. And I'm being a little lazy here, but... you know, on a long enough timeline, most people who should get into the Hall of Fame, I think, do. It takes a very long time for certain people, you know, case in point, like candidates like Deacon White, for instance. I mean, right. You know, so yeah. And the flip side is once a person is in the Hall of Fame, they're in there forever. So I'm personally of the opinion that it's fine to, you know, take a little extra time. And if you're not sure on somebody, that's okay. Punt them over to the next cycle. I don't know. To answer your original question, I do think it's going to be a while for those guys. I wouldn't count on it in the next 10 years, even, you know.
Do you think they'll be on the ballot in the next cycle, or do you think they're going to use this as the clear sign that they need a break?
I wouldn't expect Rafael Palmeiro to be on the next ballot. It would be slightly ridiculous to me if Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens were not on the next ballot, but that could happen. I mean, we could easily see a scenario the next time this ballot comes up where Jeff Kent is on the ballot, and maybe even like Will Clark, but not Barry Bonds. And that's slightly insane to me, but that could happen.
Right. They briefly had a rule in place where if candidates got below a certain percentage, then they were no longer eligible, period, forever. I would be open to something that said if they got below the 25% or whatever, that they aren't on the next ballot. And that frees up some spots for other candidates to come through because, you know, a lot of the candidates that were even on this ballot, they didn't get any support last time. And if they weren't eligible this time, then that would have freed up, you know, space for, you know, Kenny Lofton or Kevin Brown or the candidates that are new that deserve that fresh look, but just haven't gotten it. Instead, we got Mattingly and Murphy and Bell for the third time. Yeah. And, you know, as much as I like particularly Mattingly and Murphy. You know, if they're not getting the traction, I think, you know, you're just kind of wasting a cycle here by putting them on again. Of course, you know, Mattingly did well this time, and that's because it was in reaction to Bonds and Clemens. What do you think about Curt Schilling? You know, he was in the 70 something percent range with the BBWAA and then took himself out of the running. And, you know, now with the vets, he what does that come out to, like 43% or something like that? 7 out of 16.
Yeah, I mean, I really didn't know what to make of his candidacy with the committee heading into today. Like, I'll say first off, I'll preface this by saying I think Schilling will be in eventually, but it's going to take at least a couple of cycles for him. I've always kind of likened his candidacy to Jim Bunning. I think I've said that on this podcast before. But gosh, you know, if Curt Schilling had just kept his mouth shut, like from the point he threw his last pitch, he maybe would have gotten in the Hall of Fame today. You know, instead, it's going to be a little while longer. And yeah, it was interesting because I didn't think he was going to be unanimous. Like, I didn't think there was any way that could happen. But there are scenarios where, like, I could have seen him getting 12 or 13 votes today. I mean, without knowing how each individual voter, you know, without having polled them or anything, it's just that kind of thing seems like a plausible outcome. I'm struck that the vote total is a little lower, honestly, than what I was thinking it, you know, it would have been. But yeah, you know, at the end of the day, he's sort of shot himself in the foot over the years with all the stuff he's tweeted and just things he said. So, you know, whatever.
Right. I mean, if he had kept his mouth shut since he retired, he would have been in on the BBWA.
Oh yeah. In
year 9 or 10.
Yeah.
Which honestly, with the caliber of pitcher he is, I think that's too long anyway. He should have been in first, second ballot, something like that. But, you know, I am no longer in a situation where I feel like I need to support Curt Schilling. I think he was a Hall of Fame pitcher, but I don't have to waste my breath on him anymore. So I think we can move on.
Let me say one more thing about him. I mean, and then we can banish him from this podcast like Voldemort for however long we want to. But he's clearly not a first tier Hall of Famer, just if you look at it in terms of statistics and sabermetrics. But just in those terms, not, you know, looking at any of just kind of personality or character stuff, I'd say he's probably second, maybe bottom of the second tier or start of the third tier. But he's better than a lot of pitchers who are already in there. He's just also a schmuck, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. All of it.
Yeah.
Is this the result that the Hall of Fame wanted from this election, do you think?
Yeah. I mean, if I had to guess, I mean, it would be bad for them if nobody got in, you know, but having one person get in and having it be a fairly squeaky clean candidate like Fred McGriff, this is a good outcome for their process. And I kind of question to what extent they set it up to be this, you know?
Yeah. The only issue is, like, it does nothing for the backlog because this was McGriff's first time as an ERA committee candidate. And he went in, and actually really all this does is add to the backlog because now we have all of the, you know, not just Bonds, Clemens and Schilling, but Lofton, Brown, Sosa, all the other candidates that didn't get on here. Boy, do we have a lot of candidates to choose from.
Yeah. I honestly just wish that there could just be bigger ballots. I mean, you did a great thing on Twitter today, like showing how many rounds you could do, you know, what would you call it? Just, you know, a ballot that wouldn't look inconspicuously bad or conspicuously bad. I'm mixing up my words here, but you could easily go three rounds, if not four, which tells me you could probably do a 30 player ballot within reason and have enough room for everybody. And obviously that's the way it's been done at certain points in the past. The only risk, I suppose, on that is you get so many candidates to choose from that you don't really develop consensus around anybody, or it's just a lot harder to get that. And you get a lot of competing agendas. And so if you narrow it down to just an 8-player ballot, and, you know, if you're pretty deliberate about who you put on that ballot and what types of candidates that you elevate, it's a lot easier to get the outcomes that you want to get. you know?
Right. The larger ballots, that's like when you go back to like the early 2000s, or I think it's like the late 90s too, they had these huge ballots and nobody was getting in because there were so many players and you couldn't get that consensus. So largely, I think the ERA committee process has been good because it forces you each cycle to focus on a handful of candidates. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of hemming and hawing about what that group of candidates is. And, you know, I am 100% going to be in the camp that hems and haws about that. But, you know, that said, you have selected a small portion of the pool to be evaluated. And the process will work if, you know, there are candidates that can continuously get in through that and chip away at the backlog. But, you know, we've done a little bit more of that lately. But, you know, the many years of Veterans Committee shutouts have created quite the backlog here. So what do you think about the process right now? This new one that they've added. I also posted a couple things to Twitter. Like I've made some complaints about this new process. Some of them related to the Negro Leagues, some of them related to the managers, executives, and umpires getting way too much press in this format. I proposed that in reality, I think that what they've come up with in this last cycle is pretty decent. I do like the breakdown of just classic versus contemporary, but I think that should just be the player breakdown, classic and contemporary. And I think all non-players should be that third ballot. So every 3 years, we got the classic players, we got the contemporary players, and then we have the non-players. And non-players is going to be from 1839 or whatever, whenever Doc Adams started, to present, or to, you know, not present, but to 2018, I guess, would be when Mike Socha retired.
Yeah, no,
I've done that. Like, how could the process be improved? I've seen a lot of people upset that just McGriff got in. Bonds and Clemens obviously didn't. I think it was naive to think that they would get in. But what do you think about the process right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on a lot of that. I don't necessarily want to just have a special Negro League committee that meets, because if you only have, you know, a Negro League or Negro Major League candidates who get in that way, to me, it sort of creates a pejorative connotation. It's like, oh, they just got into the Negro Leagues. It's like, no, like, these were baseball players too. These were world-class players, and we need to recognize them as such. I think for everybody though, I just would like to see, I think for me, I'd like to see annual consideration of any era. I don't like this every 3 years stuff. It greatly restricts the flow of players, and it, you know, it just adds to the backlog at a point that we're already getting a little bit of one from the BBWA ballot, you know, just thanks to the inaction on inducting anybody who had any kind of connection to, you know, possible or confirmed steroid use. I'm for considering, you know, candidates more often. And I definitely think, I don't think we need to tilt toward post 1980, umpires, executives, managers, owners, or whatever, you know, they don't need their own freaking ballot once every 3 years. I mean, you know, we're not going to be waiting with bated breath about Joe West's Hall of Fame candidacy. I mean, if I know you and I, when the day comes that ballot is considered and that dude gets in, you and I are going to be on here and we're going to have thoughts, and that, you know, it'll be cool. Like I will enjoy that discussion when it comes, but most normal people, you know, that's not anything that they're really, you know, looking forward to. I want Doc Adams in the discussion more often. You know, even people like, I don't know, Chris Fondere or Gary Herman or Sam Breeden, you know, just to think of a few long ago executives who come to mind, Al Reach, you know, it's, yeah, there's all sorts of people we could still be considering just as more information becomes available.
Yeah, I think Al Reach, I didn't put him on my thread today. I should have done that. That was an oversight. And I like the idea of taking this, I don't even know what to call it, the manager, executive, umpire half of the contemporary era, and just opening that up to all of baseball history. Because what we talked about last year too, is that you know, before the modern era, there's not a ton of managers, executives, and umpires out there. So it seems like it's not adding too much burden on that ballot to add Doc Adams, to add Chris Vondera, to add Vic Harris even.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Vic Harris is a Hall of Famer, or he should be. I mean, to me, I honestly too, he came so close last year that it's like, if he was getting voted on again this year, like there'd be momentum to push him in. And instead it's like, when's he eligible even again? I mean, it's going to be a while, right? Or at least a couple years.
Not the next election, but the one after. Now he's on the classic era, which is players and managers, umpires, executives, all that from before 1980. So yeah. It's like Vic Harris and Doc Adams. And like, that's like the group that like Bobby Gritch is up against too. Like
it's, yeah. And Dave Parker and Tommy John. I mean,
it's wild to me that Dave Parker, Tommy John, and Bobby Gritch are classic baseball. So that was the other thing that I recommended was actually using either the DH 1973 or the division era 1969 to use as that designation instead of 1980. It does mean that the contemporary players is even more stacked, but I think it does a better job of splitting things out overall. I don't know. That would be my one thought if I ever got the ear of the Hall of Fame. Just, you know, I think they're onto something with this. I do think that reviewing these ballots every 3 years is probably more impactful than having them each meet every year. Cause
yeah,
I don't know. I feel like there would be like no urgency then if they're meeting every year, because then they're like, we don't want to have too many Hall of Famers. So, you know, we just talked about this guy last year. Yeah. You know, if they're spacing it out every 3 years, every 4 years feels like too much. Every two is like, wouldn't be bad, but I can't find a way to make two ballots that makes it work. So I like this 3 year cycle, and hopefully someone's listening.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, too, the history of the veteran era committee process is forever getting tinkered with. I mean, if you look at the history, I mean, and that's, I guess at the end of the day, I'm okay with that. Like most things aren't perfect in life and can be improved upon. And, you know, I'm all for that generally. I don't know. I worry about arbitrary distinctions and especially too, yeah, as you get up to the line, some of these distinctions can feel kind of capricious. I mean, yeah, it's a bit ridiculous to me that Dave Parker is going to be on the classic ballot. It's just, you know, he had his last game in what, like 1991 or 92. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to run up against those lines no matter what. Like even the new line that I drew, I think Dick Allen was pretty much a 50-50 split. Jimmy Wynn was like an even closer split. It was kind of funny.
Yeah. But, I mean, one thing I was going to say, I was thinking about this. You could do an interesting thing where you could consider living and dead candidates separately. I mean, you know, because you know, there's an argument to be made too, that the urgency, especially with the living kind of candidates, like, you know, you want people, if they're going to get this, you want them to be able to enjoy it in their lifetime. I mean, you know, it's great that Manny Mignoso got in. I mean, he's a deserving Hall of Famer, but it would have been so much better if he could have been up there on the dais and, you know, and given his speech. I would have loved to have seen that.
Before I give that my nod of approval, I'll have to look at how that might break down, but it is a, probably a cleaner distinction to make than these eras. And maybe, you know, maybe you could even get to a point where it's the process is a little bit different for the living candidates, where they try to expedite it a little bit more to make, you know, to try to get living inductees, which is what everybody wants.
Yeah.
Let's see. You mentioned momentum a little while ago. And I was curious if this is going to lead to any type of momentum for Don Mattingly now that he has 50%. But, you know, if we look at recent history with Dwight Evans and Lou Whitaker in 2020, looking like they were getting some momentum and then they were left off the ballot. And then 2016, was wild because Doc Adams had 10 out of 16. Same ballot, Harry Stovey had 8 out of 16 and Bill Dahlin had 8 out of 16. And the next ballot comes around and none of the three of them are on it. Like, so what is momentum in Hall of Fame elections?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, historically, it is kind of a thing that if candidates come close, they will get in on a subsequent, ballot. Like I think of candidates like, you know, Leo DeRocher or Joe Gordon or Nellie Fox or Vic Wellis. These are all people who, you know, in a few of those cases, they actually got enough votes to get in. They got the 75%, but there was an induction cap, so they didn't get in. Like I found this in research some years ago, and Jay Jaffe mentioned it in one of his books. And then I know like DeRocher was one of those guys who was falling a vote short. I think Gil Hodges had a year where he did it. Obviously there, I think there's other examples, but it's just, you know, it is something where, the how you do in an era or veterans committee, vote, it can be instructive for how you do in the future. But I don't know though. The other side of that is if it's a few years until, voters meet again and half the committee is different or whatever, then, it could be that your 8 votes from the time before are just kind of a statistical fluke. And yeah, if you even, you might not even make the next ballot. It's fun with small sample sizes, really. That's kind of the fun of veterans and era committee elections. I mean, it's 16 people meeting in a closed room. Anything can happen.
Right. Yeah, I guess I wouldn't hold my breath if I was a Don Mattingly fan that this would lead to an induction the next time. Who knows who's going to be on the ballot with him? I think we're going to see... I would assume that we're going to not see Bonds and Clemens, and we're going to see the likes of Whitaker and Dwight Evans and possibly Keith Hernandez next time. I forget exactly who's coming on.
Jeff Kent's the one I'd almost predict at this point that he'll get in the next cycle for this era.
Right. Yeah. He's a kind of feels like a McGriff candidate, whereas like he's a great hitter for his position. War maybe doesn't, think that he's way over the line, but thinks he's like kind of a borderline candidate. Yeah, he's the Fred McGriff of second baseman, if you ask me. Also coming on in 2026 would be Gary Sheffield, who's going to have his own issues. And then Carlos Delgado and Nomar Garciaparra, a couple more interesting candidates that, would Carlos Delgado, like why Fred McGriff and not Carlos Delgado? I couldn't answer that.
It's interesting. So, in the years that I ran my project on the, the 50 best players, not in the Hall of Fame, like Delgado got some traction. I don't know if he ever made the top 50, but he, I forget when he popped up exactly, but he's somebody who I know has sort of cult appeal to his Hall of Fame case, but that doesn't always translate super well with the era committees. If it translates anywhere within that, I think it's usually kind of the 19th century candidates. Like Deacon White was a huge cult candidate, and I think we played a part in that cult, maybe some kind of small role, but I think it's harder with the more recent candidates. I think it kind of lends itself generally more to, to the McGriffs of the world and the, honestly, Mattingly, Schelling, and Murphy, I could see all three of those guys being in the Hall of Fame at some point. To me, it's more a question of when than if, especially if Mattingly, if he's able to build, on his managerial case, he could become a Joe Torre type candidate. It's still, when you say it's still anyone's guess when that could actually be.
All right, just pulling up some numbers on Fred McGriff and Carlos Delgado. Batting average 284 McGriff, 280 Delgado. Slugging 509 McGriff, 546 for Delgado. OPS plus
right
is 134 for McGriff, 138 for for Delgado.
I'm just to cut in there for a second. I'm actually surprised that the gap is that close. I would have thought that Delgado would have a more sizable lead for that. It's a little surprising.
A lot has been made about the 7 home runs difference. Like, oh, should 7 home runs keep Fred McGriff out of the Hall of Fame? Well, the difference between McGriff and Delgado is only 20 home runs. So I don't know, 20 home runs over a 20-year career doesn't feel like a whole lot to me. They do have a 450 hit difference. Huh. But that's because they have about a 450 game difference. So that helps. So McGriff lasted a little bit longer. Played till he was 40, where Delgado was 37. But, you know, both had 1,500 RBI. I don't know. I don't see a whole lot that separates these two. Is it postseason? Let's see. What's postseason? Carlos Delgado only played in 10 postseason games, but holy crap, hit 351 and slugged 757 in those postseason games for a 1199 OPS. McGriff was really good in the postseason too, 917 yeah. OPS in 50 games.
Yeah. Are you seeing his numbers for the 93 NLCS? Like, so I was a San Francisco Giants fan growing up, and I was 10 years old in 1993. So Fred McGriff kind of single-handedly broke my heart that year, like him and Salomon Torres. But man, it's like you look at this. I mean, McGriff gets, you know, he gets traded over midseason from the Padres that year. Almost literally lights the Braves on fire because, you know, they had that there at the press box fire right. that year. But man, I'm telling you, look at those numbers. It's like a 435 batting average, 519 OBP, 696 slugging percentage. That's a 1.214 OPS. I mean, those are just monster numbers. I mean, and of course, obviously, Felly, you know, won out in that series, so people don't remember that. But man, those are some numbers.
I mean, Delgado has the higher MVP shares of the two as well. I just think it's interesting that McGriff is the slam dunk, and I think Delgado is a very similar candidate, but we'll see. We'll see. I mean, Delgado had seasons where he had 57 doubles, several 40 homer seasons, 145 RBI to lead the league once, over 1,000 OPS a couple times, 1134 OPS in 2000. Just wow. Just, and he started as a catcher. Just, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think for Delgado, maybe part of what's hurting him is he did put up a lot of his numbers kind of in the era for big numbers. And yeah, maybe it's kind of a guilt by association thing. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard any kind of steroid talk with Delgado. But, you know, maybe people see these kind of numbers from this era, and it's just regardless of whether you're thought to have used steroids or not, just, you know, the numbers just get downgraded a little bit. I mean, because, yeah, these late 90s, early 2000s numbers of his, honestly, even through like 2008, he really was putting up some banging numbers.
I don't know. They ended their careers 5 years apart. I don't know if there's enough of an era difference there for me to detect anything. I just think it's very strange that, I mean, I like Fred McGriff. I'm glad he got in the Hall of Fame. I don't see why he's a bigger candidate than like Delgado or even like a Lance Berkman. I think Lance Berkman is an interesting candidate in many ways too. He had McGriff had more of a longevity than Berkman. Berkman, I think, had better individual seasons, but Delgado, I think, is, he had that combination of both the peak and a little bit more longevity than Berkman, and that brought him to career totals right near McGriff. So I'll be interested to see how Delgado fares on the Veterans Committee. You know, he didn't last the 10 years that McGriff did. He only got 3.8% of the vote on the BBWA ballot. But yeah, I don't know. Carlos Delgado, maybe this induction helps his case a little bit there.
A little bit. I mean, I'll tell you this. I would much rather have had Carlos Delgado on this ballot than Albert Bell. I mean, obviously Delgado, yeah, wasn't eligible for this, but you know, to me, it's Delgado's got a much stronger case than like Albert Bell does. You know, it's, yeah, not even that close.
Awesome. All right. Do we have anything that we want to say about the upcoming managers, executives, umpires /pioneers? Ballot. I know you got a message earlier today about the pioneer category. Do you want to talk about that some?
Yeah. So there's a guy named Dave Metter, who on Twitter, he's Vlad for Hall of Fame, or Vlad for HOF, and the number four for that. And so I've known Dave through Twitter, I think for a long time. And so he asked something that I thought was kind of interesting. He was like, do I understand correctly? Is there not an executive or pioneers category? And I mean, the quick answer to that is, yes, there is. I mean, you know, but one thing that's interesting is, I mean, there aren't that many contemporary pioneers who are in there. I mean, I think Buck O'Neill got in last year under that category. And obviously Bud Fowler got in last year, but he's from the 1870s. But there is a case to be made that, you know, when this committee meets again next year and looks at the post-1980, you know, non-players, I mean, you could look at pioneers like Bill James or, you know, Dr. Frank Jobe, who pioneered Tommy John surgery. You know, there might be one or two others. I think your boss, Sean Foreman, at some point, there could maybe be a case made for him. And I'm totally serious about this, because I think Baseball Reference has kind of helped revolutionize kind of how we consume, you know, the game, and, you know, how we really interact with the stats of it. I mean, it's just, you know, it's done as much since the Baseball Encyclopedia, if not more, you know.
I have to admit, I heard that a couple times in user interviews over the last couple of weeks, that people definitely feel that he has a strong case. And I've before I was working with and for Sean, I may have made that case myself. I feel like I should probably stay out of it right now, but I of course would fully endorse such a thing happening. Yeah. But yeah, I think the whole, you know, one time I wrote for a, like, it was like this thing to find like the next Boston sports blogger or something like on WEI up here. And I was like, oh, I could do that. I wrote an article about Frank Jobe for the Hall of Fame. And I was like, wow, that was really not what they wanted. They wanted something that was, you know, this biting Boston sports commentary. And here I am writing about Frank Jobe. But, you know, that's the type of person that I am. And that's how I found people like you to discuss the candidacy of folks like Frank Jobe. And I think Bill James, of course, is a natural place to start as well. And there's a lot of other people that could come in after him as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, I think to me, the broader thing is it would be good to see more of a recognition of pioneers at some point. Because yeah, baseball didn't just organically become what it is. There were a lot of people that did a lot of things over the years. And the more that we can kind of recognize and respect those people, the better to me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, heck, I'd love to see someone like John Thorne considered as well. I think that there's a lot of people that have made huge contributions to the game. So appreciate Dave sending that question. And so Cooperstown Dave is kind of the visible username that he uses on Twitter. Noticed that a lot of content from Cooperstown Dave this year. I have to say he's upped the content this year and some really good stuff. So I recommend you check him out on Twitter as well, if you are not following him already. And to answer his question, though, yeah, the executives and pioneers are smushed together in one category. So, you know, you've got Buck O'Neill showing up as an executive, which is like the one job in baseball he didn't do. So it just looks really funny. Bud Fowler, you could make a case that he was an executive because of the Page Fence Giants and some of the other clubs that he started. But yeah, Buck O'Neill, it's interesting to see him there. So he's clearly a pioneer in terms of, like, when was the last time a true pioneer was inducted into the Hall of Fame? You might have to go back to Harry Wright for that. Although Harry Wright was also a manager and I believe executive. So, you know, a lot of these candidates, they cover multiple categories. And that's what would be interesting about, like, a James or a Jobe, because they are clearly 100% pioneer. We just haven't had one of those since maybe Chadwick.
Yeah. And I mean, in Harry Wright, I mean, yeah, even if it is Harry Wright, that's like 1953. And if it's right. Chadwick, I mean, was Chadwick, what was that, 1937? I mean,
something
it's
like that. Yeah. Been a little while.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. It's interesting though. And I mean, even to get a little wonkish here, I mean, even some of the executives you could maybe argue in some small way were pioneers. Like, I mean, Walter O'Malley is kind of a reviled figure, you know, for I think a lot of baseball fans, or at least a lot of Brooklyn Dodger fans who, you know, it's probably, I guess it's been a minute for some of them now, but he was kind of a pioneer and helping usher baseball to the West Coast. I mean, obviously if he didn't do it, somebody else was going to, but I mean, it's, you know, in some small way, I mean, he's sort of a pioneer himself.
Yeah, very true. I think that you could say Billy Beane as well, you know, just ushering that part of the statistical revolution. Obviously he didn't start it. He built on a lot of the things that, you know, folks like Bill James were doing, but he brought it into the front office, that's for sure. So yeah, lots of interesting stories there.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Well, Graham, I appreciate you taking the time to go over this induction of Fred McGriff, which I am very, very happy about. Yeah. I think that the Hall of Fame is better with folks like Fred McGriff in it. And I'm glad that we do have a inductee from this ballot, because there were 8 candidates that certainly could have been in the Hall of Fame. Any closing thoughts on this cycle?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I am not upset. Like, I mean, I'm not mad that Fred McGriff is going in the Hall of Fame. Now, am I super excited and just beside myself? No, I mean, I'd be losing my stuff, so to speak, if like Lou Whitaker had gotten in today. Like I would feel vindicated for that sort of thing and be like, oh, okay, cool. This, his value, which I and other people have preached for years, is finally being recognized, and we're not there yet. You know, it's like, I still feel like, you know, with candidates like Lou Whitaker, you know, a lot of the baseball world still hasn't really woken up to how great, you know, they were. But this isn't a bad day by any means. I mean, you know, Fred McGriff is he's a worthy Hall of Famer, and you know, I'll look forward to his induction next summer and hopefully to eventually seeing his plaque when I get to Cooperstown again.
Right. Yeah. If it was Bonds, Clemens, Schilling, or Palmeiro, my reaction would have been not like happiness, just thank God this is over. Like,
yeah.
Fred McGriff, I mean, it's fine. I think he's a decent candidate. The one I probably would have been most excited about, I think, is Dale Murphy. And I think he's right on the cusp sabermetrically, but I think just Dale Murphy as a person, I just love Dale Murphy. I always have. And, you know, even like the Hall of Stats doesn't have him over the line, but I always, you know, like to tell people, like, I don't even follow the Hall of Stats like 100% here, because, you know, give me the chance and I'm going to put Dale Murphy in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So yeah, but good for Fred McGriff. I'm very happy for him. I'm happy that he didn't have to wait very long through this cycle, whereas it looks like a lot of people are going to have to. But hopefully next time around we get more names and can celebrate more great careers.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
All right. Graham, you mentioned the book earlier. So I just want to make sure that we're still making some progress there. And anything to tell people about on social or the day job?
Oh, yeah, no, I've written about the Hall of Fame for many years, and, you know, obviously I've known Adam through that, and kind of one of my back burner sort of projects that hopefully I'll be, you know, getting back onto the front burner before too long is writing a book about kind of the Veterans Committee and Era Committee kind of history and process. I mean, that's where the bulk of the Hall of Famers get in. There is a good book that can be written there where I could expand on, you know, a lot of the research I've done already. And there's still a lot more research I want to do around it. It's early stages. This is the kind of thing, I'm the kind of writer where I'd rather do something well than do something fast. So this might take me 5 years to do. It might take me longer than that, but it is a bucket list thing for me. And it is something that I do want to get done at some point in my life. So if I have to give the same spiel another 10 times over the years on this podcast, on the years to come, so like, so be it. But yeah, that is something that I do want to make sure I do.
Excellent. I don't know if I'll be writing a book anytime soon, but I'd be happy to write the foreword for yours. So,
oh, dude, yeah, no, like I'd be honored to have you do it. So yeah, I will have my people call your people.
and no, people, I did not just volunteer myself for that. Graham has mentioned it to me before, so I wasn't just a total jerk right there. But anyway,
yeah, no, Adam. For anybody listening, like Adam is a logical choice for this. I mean, we're of very similar minds when it comes to like the Hall of Fame and the stuff that we enjoy with this. I mean, my bread and butter is overlooked candidates. I much prefer that, talking about that, to the people who get in with 95% of the vote the first time on the writer's ballot. That's just not that interesting to me, you know?
I definitely hear you. All right. Well, he is Graham Dude on Twitter. I am Baseball Twit on Twitter. And I hope everyone has a very, what am I supposed to say here? A wonderful night. You might be listening to this in the morning, but you know what? I hope the whole week is awesome. Everybody enjoy it. Take care. Bye-bye.